So the question was asked, if we're told that on Rosh Hashanah your income is decided for you, so then what does that mean? You don't have to go out to work? Whatever you're going to make anyways. How does that work, right? And what about prayer? And what about your free will? So that's an excellent question. Let's address it from a few angles. But before we do that, I just want to mention a part of the Gemara that we did not mention. It doesn't say all your income is decided on Rosh Hashanah. It says all your income except for the income you need for educating your children and the income you need for honoring the Sabbath and the holidays, and according to some versions, Rosh Chodesh as well, where if you invest more, then from heaven they'll give you more. And if you invest less, then from heaven they'll give you less. So it's not that on Rosh Hashanah everything was decided. Most of your income was decided. Okay, so that's just, we should be aware of that. Now, so what does that mean? Let's just, again, note another interesting point that Nachmanides points out in his famous speech about Rosh Hashanah, and that is that you'll notice that Rosh Hashanah is about the mundane. It's about this world. It's about how many Kit Kats will you eat this year, yeah? It's about the simple physical thing. We have a bunch of Europeans. You guys don't know what Kit Kat is, probably. Okay. M&M's. Okay. Burgers. Okay. So that's a correct point that you made. That it's Rosh Hashanah is the deciding time about your physical success. I would like to answer your question in two directions, which are both true and seem to be contradictory, and I want you to use your brain to reconcile them, and I'll begin with an allegory that will help you understand how you're supposed to reconcile the two directions, okay? A guy comes to the doctor, and the doctor tells him, don't eat foods that are high in fat, because then your arteries get clogged, you'll have a heart attack, and you'll die. So the man looks at him and says, gee, I'm in my 50s, but you know, my grandfather is already past his 90s, and he ate all those fats and trans fat and everything his whole life, and he smoked and he drank a beer every 3 hours. So what are you telling me, doctor? Let me enjoy life. So as the doctor starts saying, well, you know, there are many factors, there's genetics, and maybe he drank red wine, and he's got all kinds of answers. But wait a second, when we started, you told me that if I do this, I will die. Now you're suddenly saying, well, it's not so simple. There are many factors involved. Ah, so it's not so simple. Okay, so in medicine, we accept that answer. So we have to understand that in the spiritual realm, things are not as simple as we would like. So let's begin with, again, one direction. The Talmud asks, why do we daven all year? We daven that we should have good health. We daven that we should have prosperity. What are you davening for? It was all decided on Rosh Hashanah. So the Talmud already asks the question, why do we daven any other time during the year other than between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? We know it's decided Rosh Hashanah and it's sealed on Yom Kippur, so you have 10 days. That's when you should have minyan and everyone will spend their time davening. And the rest of the year, let's go have a good time as much as we can, you know. Whatever will come of it, will come of it. Good question, right? So, first of all, the question should scare the wits out of us. Meaning that means that we are holding now 4 weeks away from the most monumental time in the coming year. So that's a pretty scary thought. And we say it on Rosh Hashanah. I can add a personal point. I'll just pause the recording. That's a very scary thought. That last Rosh Hashanah or last Yom Kippur, however you want to decide, however you, whatever, but that period, we have 10 days. Better make it worthwhile. And I'll even add a point, but you know, maybe in the end, remind me to come back to the matriarchs. We have to discuss the matriarchs at the end. Okay, so that's direction number one. And the Talmud's answer is, the Talmud gives one of two answers. The Talmud suggests either that we rule halachically, that we are judged on a daily basis,
we're not only judged on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore our prayer can change things. Or, and that seems to be the more accepted answer, that although there is a decision on Rosh Hashanah, you can still get a repeal. Meaning, if you really try to break through the heavens, then you never know. And Rav Listman quoted a Gemara before, right? Afilu cherev chadam munachat al tzavaro shel adam al yimna atzmo min harachamim. What does the Talmud say that about? Does anyone know? Even if a sharp sword is already placed on a person's neck, he should not hold back from asking for mercy. You guys have strength. Can I just mention a very fascinating point about this Gemara? I'll just mention a thought. What does the Gemara say? It doesn't say pray. It says do not withhold yourself from asking for mercy. Again, the Talmud could have just said, even if there's a sharp sword on your neck, pray. That would have been the simple way to talk. Why do you think the Talmud didn't say that? I didn't see this written anywhere. I think the Talmud was revealing to us a component of the human psyche. That when a person faces a challenge, deep down inside he wants to pray. And then what happens is he tells himself, nah, come on, get real. What difference does it make? You really believe in this? You got this little Jiminy Cricket standing out there telling you, don't do it. And what the Talmud was saying is, don't hold back. Come on, you can do it. And the Talmud wasn't telling you to be proactive. The Talmud was just saying, stop withholding your emotions. Let yourself express what you really want to do. Meaning that's why the Talmud didn't have to say, go pray. Because that's the instinct. You want to. The Talmud just says, stop withholding yourself. And if we already mentioned that, being that it's the first night we're together, I'll tell you a little secret. When I want to have focus on my prayer, I go where no one knows me. You guys sang a song before. There was a song when I was a kid. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. You guys heard of that? Yeah. So when I daven, I want to go where nobody knows my name. I sometimes go to a Hasidic shul where everyone else has long payas and they're all with hats and they look at me like, "What's he doing here?" And I sit in my corner and I daven and I could say whatever I want. I can do what I want because no one knows me. I'm not self-conscious, you know. So I think there's food for thought there. But back to our point. So what's the Talmud talking about there? The Talmud's talking about the following story. King David sinned. And God said to him, you have a choice. Either you will die, or all your seed is going to be banished with almost no one left. What do you choose? And King David said, okay, I'll bite the bullet, leave my kids alone. And then the day came when King David was grabbed by a fantastic warrior, Goliath's brother. And he grabbed him and said, I'm going to kill you. And King David was left without any weapons, and he was a dead man. And then he said to him, I'm not only going to kill you, I'm going to let you sense what it means that death is coming. And he took a sword, and he put it in the ground, and then he took King David and threw him up to land on that sword and die. And his point was, I want you to experience the death for as long as possible before you die. Okay? That's the story. So King David was told already by God, it's over, it's finished, you're going to die. And he's headed down and he sees the sword coming. It's over, right? He's davening. He's praying. What are you praying for? And in the last second, now this is really a much longer story. I'm skipping a large part of the story. His nephew, Joab, the son of Tzruya, runs up and he's about to save him. And they have this really quick conversation where Yoav says, what you doing getting into trouble? And David says, well, God gave me a choice. And God, and I said, let me bite the bullet. I don't want my kids to bite the bullet. And his nephew says, you fight your battles, let them fight their battles. Their problem is their problem. You tell God you want out. So he convinces King David. He says, you know, each one of your descendants has to fight their own battles. You don't have to worry about a decree that'll hit them. They have to worry about a decree that'll hit them. You have to worry about your life. And he convinces King David, and he saves King David's life. And all of this happens in split seconds where, at the end, King David really should have died at that sword. So what King David saw was a moment where there was nothing but gravity between him and the sword. And in that split second, he did pray. And in that split second, his nephew Yoav came and saved him from the sword. And then he left the tradition for his descendants. Even if there's a sharp sword by your throat, and the sword is on one's throat, all that's left is for it to slice. He should still be davening. But what you're davening for? I'm davening because at any moment it can change. You know, I could tell you a story from 50 years ago. I could tell you a story from 70 years ago. I could tell you a story from 1,000 years ago. But I'd rather tell you a story from 5 years ago. I had a Rebbe, Rabbi Avram Pessin Zatzal, blessed memory. And he had a heart condition and he had Parkinson's. And the medication for the heart condition made the Parkinson's worse, and the medication for the Parkinson's made the heart condition worse. So he was constantly in this seesaw, back and forth. And I didn't know what to daven. What can you pray? You know, he's been diagnosed, it's over. But you got to daven. Our sages said, even though the doctors think it's over, even though the sword is there on the throat, you daven. So I kept praying for him. One day I get a phone call from him, and he tells me, you know, the doctors just told me they think they misdiagnosed my Parkinson's. They think I have Lyme disease. I must have been bitten by a tick. And all these years, they couldn't figure out there were certain symptoms that just didn't match Parkinson's. And now they're saying it was probably Lyme disease, and that's curable. So here we are, after years of thinking it's over, suddenly, in a day, everything changes. So I'm saying, you never know. You have to daven. That's what Chazal tell us. You don't know, even though the sword is on one's neck. So what does that mean? But on Rosh Hashanah, was it decreed that he will live or that he will die? One of the most powerful prayers we say on Rosh Hashanah is Unesane Tokef. We describe the awesome day and we say, today it's going to be decided who will live and who will die. By the way, those of you who have a minute, and even if you don't, it's worth taking the time. There's a wonderful website, whoshalllive.com, about that prayer. It's just a movie. It's like a 3-minute movie about that prayer on what's decided on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. If you have a minute, last year I brought the guys into the office and I showed it to them. Maybe we'll do that this year too. But at any rate, you guys, it's worth taking a minute to see. So coming back to Rosh Hashanah. So you see, on Rosh Hashanah was decided King David would die. But King David's prayer at that moment changed it that King David would live. And you're assuming that what's decreed on Rosh Hashanah is he will live or he will die. Maybe what's decreed on Rosh Hashanah is if he works hard enough at it, he'll live. Maybe what was decreed on Rosh Hashanah is if he works hard enough, then he'll make $15 million. Meaning the decree doesn't have to be that he will get X and that's it. Doesn't matter what he'll do, that's what'll happen. No. The decree is potentially he will get X. Now it's up to him to do his end of it. So that's one angle. Now we have to remember another angle. The Talmud does say that you can pray. So that seems to indicate it's not so decisive. The Talmud says, if you repent, you become a better person, then even if it was decreed that you would have a very small amount of rain, well, God knows how to make a lot out of a small amount of rain. Meaning God can make it rain at exactly the opportune moment, in exactly the opportune location, so that you become a millionaire from that rain, even though it was a small amount of rain. So that means it's decided, but it's not exactly decided. How it will play itself out remains to be seen. And there, so that seems to uproot the whole idea of Rosh Hashanah, meaning it's decided, but not exactly. There's still wiggle room in there. Yeah? So that's why I said two angles, and you have to rectify them. And now that we brought the two angles, I want to conclude with one final point. So you think, I got wiggle room. I'll be a good boy next year. I'll be a good boy during the year. I can make it work. So I want to just point out something that I noticed a few years ago and it blew my mind. You have Abraham and Sarah. Pretty pious people, right? I'd say. And they're praying. They're praying for a child. And they're praying not for a year, but they're praying for decades for a child. You'd think if anyone could make the rules change in heaven, they could do it. And what does the Talmud say? And it's quoted in Halacha. The Talmud says that it was on Rosh Hashanah that their fate was overturned. It was on Rosh Hashanah that it was decided that they would have children. So we shouldn't bank that our prayers throughout the year can change everything from Rosh Hashanah. It's true there's a certain amount of wiggle room, but the big picture, you see, even for big people like Abraham and Sarah, was decided on Rosh Hashanah. And when God wanted Abraham and Sarah to have a child, then it had to go through a Rosh Hashanah in order to change their luck and their fate. So when we're standing here now, 4 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, we have to understand the gravity. It scares the wits out of me when I think of the gravity, the enormity of the days that are coming. There were rabbis that when they'd hear that Elul was coming on Shabbos, we declare, Elul, they'd faint from fear. That's when you have an appreciation of where we're headed. But remember, God wants us to have a good year more than we want it. So He's rooting for us.